Hi, my name is John.
And my name's Chris.
And this is Stay on Target.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Stay on Target. We're your hosts.
You can follow us both on Twitter at JohnWright777
and ChrisWright250 and always online at StayOnTargetPodcast.com.
All right, Chris, so this week we are doing a focus on comic books.
Yes, we will be. Why is your mic all crazy?
I don't know. It's like aiming down and at the floor, so I'm like hunched over
like the Hunchback
underneath
of Notre Dame.
Which is a good movie, by the way.
Yes, good old Disney movie.
Yeah,
right?
Like, we should have talked about that a few weeks ago whenever we talked about
not a highlight of my childhood.
Well, like, I didn't really like it as a kid. I don't know that I understood it. And
nope.
So, like, more recently, whenever I've gone back,
just
it's like
they
it,
didn't understand The Hunchback.
Exactly.
I didn't understand that movie.
You didn't understand The Hunchback of Notre Dame,
the movie.
Just
exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
So
okay.
This week,
yes.
We have an interview with Royden Lepp, the creator of Rust.
Yes, one of my favorite graphic novel series, but that's a bit later in the show. First, the pick of the week! Pick of the week!
Okay, so our pick of the week this week, we both have the same pick of the week.
Yes.
This has never happened before.
I feel like it has happened before.
Oh,
maybe
really?
One more time.
It possibly has.
I think we like did a whole fake thing where we'll say our pick on three, and then we both said the same thing. I don't know.
We
I
did
sort
do
of
that.
Remember that happening.
I don't remember what it was for.
It was
for.
Like on episode 10 or something. I don't know. Maybe 11,
yeah.
12.
Well, this Saturday, May 3rd, 2014.
Yes.
The day before Star Wars Day.
Which, honestly, they should have waited and released all of that like casting info until May the 4th. Why wouldn't they do this?
I wondered that as well.
It's on a Sunday, but...
Actually, for those of you who don't know, Star Wars released the casting info for Episode 7, upcoming Episode 7 this week.
It's awesome.
And they did it on Tuesday?
Yes.
And
and the Twitter sphere erupted with all sorts of things. And there was like a cast photo that I think it was Chris Eliopoulos put a bunch of lens flares on and said it wasn't. He was like, sorry guys, this is an easy joke. You know, anyway.
What was crazy was like I was trying to get on the site and it was on StarWars.com. Like it was taking forever for the site to load just because there's so many people accessing it. But yeah, so like they announced all that. But like, yeah, why not wait until
May the 4th?
May the 4th,
the unofficial Star Wars holiday, you know?
Is it because it's a Sunday,
it's
a weekend?
It's on a Sunday. I don't know. Honestly,
not
I don't
a big
know.
News day?
Or maybe they just wanted to like
throw it
out there
early. I can't imagine anything
early.
Else going on.
That's true.
Maybe they have more announcements.
Ooh.
On Star Wars Day.
Ooh. Okay, so I'll say one thing about this.
Right.
About and there's a lot of things I love about the casting and everything.
Yes.
But I will say one thing about it, and then
yes.
We will get on to our pick of this week.
Yes.
Where is Lando?
That's true. We did say that. The answer is I don't know. You know, he is 70-something. And what the crazy thing is, you know, he's, you know, in the Lego movie.
Yeah, he was in the Lego
movie.
So why
would he not be in Star Wars?
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens.
I don't know.
Like, maybe he just isn't...
A main guy, and so maybe like the previous trilogy where he shows up like in one of the following films. Maybe he'll follow up in like you know.
But this is what I do like about this is like the fact that they have the original cast and then a few unknowns.
Yes,
Andy Serkis is in it. You know who knows what he's doing. Hopefully,
probably every single alien.
Probably, which is awesome. And
I could see him as Jabba the Hutt. That'd be amazing.
There have been rumors swirling
actually,
over
Jabba's dead
over the weekend last weekend about. The story centering around very heavily around Han Solo.
Yes.
Which is
great news.
Yes.
This is amazing news.
I not only love Han Solo, but I love Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford. Yeah. For sure. All right. So back to the pick of the week.
Yes. Free comic book day.
Free comic book day.
So let's
Wednesday or not Wednesday. What am I talking about? Free comic book day is Saturday, May the 3rd.
Yes.
So make sure you guys head out that morning early on and head out to your local comic shop, support them, pick up their stuff. Basically every local comic shop also will have a bunch of sales going.
Mm-hmm.
This is usually like a big day for them, you know?
Yeah. Like, you know, head to your, and if you don't know where your local comic shop is, you can go to freecomicbookday.com. You can find a participating store near you.
Yeah, there's like a comic shop locator on there, I do believe. So
and you know, it's just what the name implies. There are lots of free comic books.
tons, like too many to talk about in the podcast. So we have compiled our like favorites, our picks, like the ones that we feel like are going to be the biggest deal.
The ones we're going to grab.
Yeah, the ones that we're going to pick up. And I guess we should start this off with the Arcadia hardback offering that they have there. It's like a compilation of Mouse Guard, and it's got Rust in it. It's got Bolivar, and it's got a Labyrinth
Farscape.
And Farscape. Yeah, yeah. So this is going to be a hardback again. Like they did this 2 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. And it was this really awesome hardback. Kind of looks like one of those like golden books from back in the day. And
yeah.
It's just, I literally sit it next to all of my graphic novels on my shelf. It's that awesome.
It was more than 2 years ago that they had that hardback.
I think it was 2 years ago, because last year they had the square one that had like, it was a flip book with Rust and then Mouse Guard on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And in which Chris Eliopoulos and Nate Cosby actually had a really awesome story in the middle with Cowboy.
Yeah, that flipped in the middle.
Yeah, where like, literally it flipped. Yeah.
Yes, and by flip book, for those of you who don't know, it's not like you flip through it, you know, like things move.
Which
but,
would be really cool anyway.
Yeah, you're reading it one way, then like you read it from the other direction.
Yes, it's like if you turn it upside down, it has a different comic cover on the other side.
Yeah,
for sure. But this is a hardback, and it's got a story from Royden Lepp in it about Rust, and I'm super excited to read that one. He always does a really awesome job.
It's my favorite like pick every single year. Now, you know, like, you know, the bigger name comics always have, you know, something that comes out, but it doesn't necessarily like it's.
It always feels like it is just like an arbitrary kind of like, well, here's what's going
story.
In the universe. You
right.
know, it's
but
like
these
a,
actually
a
feel
recap.
Like they mean something a lot of times. You know, like they. They give you a glimpse into the story.
Yeah, like it's a self-contained kind of story where hey, can you tell a story in you know a certain number of pages or whatever? You know, it really definitely has some of the best narratives of Free Comic Book Day in the Arcadia book. So that's my number one pick. Next, I guess I would say Guardians of the Galaxy. Marvel's got a Guardians of the Galaxy Free Comic Book Day. And I guess they're doing this one because it's kind of pairing with the movie. I know that last year they did a... like, or DC rather, did like a Superman one just because they had the Superman movie coming out. So, you know, Marvel's doing the Guardians of the Galaxy one. We'll see how that goes. It's going to be a good one to pick up.
Yeah, they've got Guardians of the Galaxy and Rocket Raccoon.
So you can definitely see that focus on Guardians of the Galaxy for sure. Because they've got the two different books with the same thing going on in them.
And that'll be cool to pick up.
Oh, definitely.
You know, like, I don't know a whole lot about Guardians of the Galaxy. I've never read them. I'm just going to be completely honest. I've never read the series.
The extent of your knowledge is probably the trailer, right?
It is, for sure. And
that's anecdotal
knowledge
as far as
I have from friends who... but even a
lot
of
Wikipedia page. I've looked up the Wikipedia.
Right,
so.
Right. Well, I mean, even a lot of my friends who are huge into Marvel comics, they don't pick up Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right, which is honestly one of the reasons why I'm super excited about the movie coming out in the summer, is because we've got this, this movie that nobody expected to be a movie to be made and stuff. I mean, it's just like people does it tie in? Does it not? You know, there's those discussions going on.
They did clarify it's going to tie in.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Isn't there a new Rocket Raccoon comic coming out by a really great artist?
Yeah, I think it's Scotty Young, and I think that debuts sometime in the summer, like July or something like that.
Yeah, they've said it's going to be like a zanier take on Rocket Raccoon, and
which he's a raccoon, and he runs around with a gun. And, you know, talks and stuff. So how could you get more zany than that?
Right.
I don't know.
He kind of compared it to like old like Daffy Duck comic books or something like that.
That's awesome.
You know, so that I think we're going down that kind of just goofy route.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. There's also the DC pull. I mean, we just talked about two Marvel pulls, but there's the DC pull, and it's got a futuristic, like it's like Batman Beyond. It's a look into their more recent series of, I think it's Justice League 3000 or something like that. It's got the Batman Beyond Batman in it, and it's got some of your futuristic heroes. I'm not sure what the marketing strategy is with this one. I mean, there's not really a movie coming out soon or anything that they can pair it with.
What's the whole Futures End deal about?
I have no
idea.
Well,
it's Futures End number zero. So is this a new arc they're going to be starting?
Or it could be like a backstory onto like the Justice League 3000. Because I know that that's kind of the futuristic Justice League.
They just started
that comic recently.
A few years ago, whenever they did War of the Supermen.
Yes.
They started off that.
That's right.
With an issue zero.
With the miniseries, yeah.
Well, they started off the four-issue miniseries with an issue zero, Free Comic Book Day issue zero.
Which arguably the issue zero was probably my favorite issue in that run.
Well, I mean, it was a great idea, you know, and just the fact that, hey, we're going to replace for a month, going to replace our weekly super comics with this all-encompassing ends to the past 2 years,
right,
that we've been building up to, and that right. was genius.
Yeah, we've also got some like nods. We'll give some nods. Atomic Robo is always a good one to pick up. It's yeah. really fun.
There's Sonic the Hedgehog and Mega Man comic books together.
Yeah, it's like a flip book. Again, that's the one where you flip it over. And speaking of Star Wars, there's the Steam Wars, and so I think that's just like it looks like a take on Star Wars, but it's like steampunk, that sort of thing. It's not really about Star Wars. It's not the same characters or anything. It's just kind of like a steampunk
parody.
Yes, for sure. That's cool. All right, so here's one that I guess what we'll call this. What do you want to call this?
Our wild card.
This is our wild card. This is, oh my gosh.
The cover is very intriguing. What are you doing? John is moving around and destroying everything in the room.
I have to get over. I want to read what the actual like description on the website is.
So the cover's awesome.
Yeah, the cover's awesome.
It has this guy with a gun. It's very like
he looks like a Native American, you know.
Yeah, it's called Magic Wind.
Yeah, it's Magic Wind. All right, so, but this is the wild card because it could be really good or it could be really, really bad. We have the description. It says, with a shard of metal in his brain, allowing him limited access to past memories and only being left with an astonishing ability to foresee the future through visions and premonitions, Ned Ellis is no ordinary man. I would say not. Once a U.S. soldier, he is now a Sioux shaman who goes by the name Magic Wind. This free comic book day edition will give you an exciting extended preview into the thrilling upcoming graphic novel. Okay, there's so many things about this that just confuse and like, I don't know, this, my curiosity is like, what is this? I don't know.
It's pretty ridiculous.
But this is the beauty of Free Comic Book Day because there's going to be lots of people who have the opportunity to pick up a comic book about a guy with a shard of metal in his brain that isn't a U.S. soldier anymore.
But he's a
Sioux shaman.
Named Magic Wind.
Yeah, named Magic Wind. It's like, I don't know, it's just, I'm trying to make the connection between all
this
of these
This could be
things,
an amazing so. Comic. Like,
it could
but
be
the description is hilarious.
It could be
and
good.
I will definitely be picking it up just to see what this is all about.
You know, you have like these ideas where I feel like, you know, this happens in like Hollywood and almost any like thing that has like storytelling and that sort of thing. You come up with these ideas, but then someone says, hey, what's this about? And then you go,
yeah.
Well, if I just told you, you would laugh at it and think it's nuts, but it's good. I'm telling you. So
I think the last year one that surprised me was, I think it was like Steam Engines of Oz.
Yes.
That was a great comic.
It was like a steampunk version of The Wizard of Oz. It was
really
cool.
Well, like, so like, it was basically like showing like, okay, Oz is this huge like town that runs on these workers that live underneath the city and all that kind of stuff. Like it was crazy.
Yeah.
And that was really fun. I think was it the year before where there was that Western, what was that called?
Oh, I was super excited about it beforehand. It was the Six Shooter or the Seventh
yes.
Gun or something like that. I don't remember, but and then I started picking it up. Like I read the book and it was like, okay, this is okay. But I started picking it up and it was one of those where it was like, it made it apparent that I didn't necessarily want to pick it up as it went. And it
yeah.
was like more like, hey, if you want to buy this as a graphic novel later on, go ahead and do that. But a lot of people,
right.
again, a lot of people picked that one up that I knew. So I don't know. It's like Free Comic Book Day is that awesome day where you can go and just pick up anything. And it's probably, you know, you can see if it's awesome and see if you want to pick it up as a weekly or monthly, or see if you know, want to wait for the graphic novel and that sort of thing. So, I mean, it's a really good day to try out comics and to
yeah.
get into comics. It's initially how I got back into comics,
yep.
You know, as an adult. So.
Yep. We are going to be down at the
Outer Limits Borough.
Yep, and we're going to pick that stuff up.
Yeah, in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And so if you're in the Nashville area,
that's where to go.
That's the place to go. Head on down there and see Chuck and the guys and hang out. They always have a really, really cool thing going on over
They've
there.
They've got a lot of – it's really kid-friendly. They've got a lot of, like, characters. You know, usually there's a lot of superheroes there, Wonder Woman, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I can't remember who
was
there last
year. I think last
year
we had Darth Vader.
Darth Vader, yeah,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We had I think they actually did Halloween Comic Fest this last time,
That's
too.
Where we saw Darth Vader.
Well, they also had the Commissioner. Commissioner Gordon
yes.
was there as well, so that was really fun.
And Batman. Batman's there. Batman
yeah.
was there.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a lot of fun. Like, it's just cool just to – with even if there were not free comics, it's just cool to go hang out with people who love comics. And like you said, there's lots of deals, you know?
Yeah, like, I think they'll be doing probably like buy one, get one free trades or something like that. Or maybe
they're in
Outer Limitsboro. And things like that. So you can check out all the deals. Like usually they announce things on different comic book shops, Facebook pages and stuff. And they announce kind of what the deals are beforehand. So you can check that out on their Facebooks and stuff. Just do a little research.
Find your local comic shop. It's freecomicbookday.com and head out there on Saturday. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Stay on Target. We are here with Royden Lepp, the creator of Rust. Hey, Royden, how's it going?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Thanks for being on. So we just had a few questions for you. You have your third volume of Rust coming out. Is it next week?
I believe it's May 7th.
May 7th.
Is that next week?
Yes, it sure is. It's the Wednesday after Free Comic Book Day there. Free Comic Book Day is May 3rd, so that would be May 7th. So.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, so it should be on Wednesday then.
That's awesome. That's awesome. This is the third volume in the series, and basically it just picks up where the last one left off.
Yeah, like almost immediately. We did a review of your very first one. I think it was maybe a year or so ago, and that was around the time that I first picked up Rust. And I actually found out about the book from a Free Comic Book Day, I think 3 years ago or something.
Yeah.
Yay, it works.
it does work.
It absolutely does. And especially, I think that year they had a hardcover. Arcadia did a hardcover offering. And so that was like, it was hard to resist the hardcover there, and found your story in the middle. I think this year they're doing a hardcover as well. Do you have a story in this year's Arcadia offering for Free Comic Book Day?
I do. Yeah. Every year, it always kind of interrupts my progress, and it's usually at a really crucial time. And every year, I'm like, okay, this year I'm not gonna do Free Comic Book Day because I need to focus on the volumes and. I have to shift gears like really suddenly and get into a Free Comic Book Day mode and then get that story done and get it out and then go back to whatever I was doing. So it's never really very fun. And I'm like, this year I'm not going to do it. But every year they're like, you got to do it. And I know that I have to because of guys like you. I've had so many people say, I found this on Free Comic Book Day. And for good reason. I think Arkea got, you know, well over 250,000 copies of...
Wow.
That first hardcover into the hands of readers, and
that's
I think
awesome.
Even after that, so yeah,
definitely. I always enjoy those stories just because they also like, and both times you've done them, they kind of offer something a different angle to the storyline and give you a little bit more depth of character within the universe. And it was really nice in the hardcover, I guess, of volume 2, and then I guess now in the upcoming volume 3, you slide those stories into those volumes, which just adds depth to those characters and their day in and day out lives.
Yeah, it's fun to add a little extra story. It's fun to try to tell a story in that few pages. That's I think the joke at Arkea is, you know, it takes 8 pages for me to tell that somebody's tying their shoe. So it's always a good challenge for me. But so basically, if I'm thinking about it correctly, this year's Free Comic Book Day story will be at the end of Volume 4.
Right on.
Yeah.
Wow. Right on.
That's cool. So what inspired you to tell this story? You know, it touches on a lot of themes, you know, like family and, you know, deals with, you know, kind of just loss and growing up and a sense of like freedom versus a sense of duty, you know. What inspired you to create this story?
Yeah, that's a good question. I want to have a really inspired answer that, you know, says I this is a story I've been wanting to tell my whole life, and I had it, you know, craft every page in my mind crafted, you know, for years, and none of that's true. It started as a couple of sketches. I mean, it was literally like I drew Jet Jones on my drawing table at work. I work in video games, and a coworker said, "What's that?" And I said, "I don't know." And he said, "Well, you should. That looks like there's a story there." And that was literally the beginning of Jet Jones.
Wow.
That's awesome.
And from there, the story kind of took twists and turns. But I tend to write a story by creating scenes that I want to see or situations that are interesting to me. So then that's when I started to kind of dig into, you know, what they say, writing what you know. Mm-hmm. And I grew up on a Canadian, on the Canadian prairies, and I like drawing robots, and I had this character of Jet Jones, and I just thought, oh, it'd be cool to have this old like rusty robot thing on the prairies, like on a farm, because I don't feel like I've seen that before. Mm-hmm. That was interesting to me, and it wasn't something that was overdone, and so it kind of grew from there, and it built, and it became. Then when I sit down to actually write it, then I'm you know, I finish and I'm like, oh wow, there's all these themes I didn't know. I hadn't really planned on putting them in. About freedom and responsibility, but that's just what kind of what came out of me. So
right on, awesome. Right on. That's amazing. So in the flashbacks, let's diving into kind of the story. And again, you know, we'll keep a little bit of this beginning part, I guess, as spoiler free as possible, just to, you know, for people that maybe haven't picked up the books yet, which if you haven't picked up these books, you definitely need to. These are definitely something that you need to be, have in your collection. But anyway, the flashbacks in each book kind of seem to, run in like reverse time, where each time they're a little bit, you know, prior, you see something that's going backwards in time almost, whereas the main story runs forwards. What was your thought process in putting that into the books?
Yeah, I know. It's like a little memento thing going on there. I didn't really plan it. I mean, I did. You have to plan that, but
yeah.
I didn't envision it at the beginning and be like, oh, this is something I want to do. In fact, the original incarnation of the story, when it was with a different publisher years ago, didn't have the flashbacks as a major part of the story.
Wow.
And so that was something that I added later, before we went to print. So, it's even hard for me to say that, because a lot of people would hear that and be like, oh my gosh, what is the story without the flashbacks? Mm-hmm. But that's, sometimes it's things like that that come in at the last minute that are like, oh yes, okay, this really ties everything together, mm-hmm. and it's what was needed. So, I hope that it's an enjoyable experience for readers, that they, when they get to the end of the fourth volume, they'll kind of like go back and get to piece their way through the flashbacks again. I hope it's not confusing, of course.
The flashback that starts the third book is, it just grabbed me from the very start. Like, it was my favorite one so far.
Cool. That's exactly how it should work. I mean, we're moving backwards in time, and yet we should be getting closer to the climactic event of that period of time in the story. And nice. That was kind of my goal, and it's kind of weird to do it backwards, to hit the climax going backwards. But so hopefully that stays true, and volume four is just as exciting, if not more.
That's awesome. Cool.
Roman writes a lot of letters to his father, and like, you do a great job of making those letters relevant to the story in each book. Do you write the story first, or do you like write these letters and then try to make the story fit the letter, or is it the other way around?
The story is in place first. Mm-hmm. The letters seem to come last, because I know what needs to be said, but I haven't necessarily said it. I haven't like sat down and written this letter, and even to the point that I will be editing the letter along with like the final art edits and stuff like that.
Wow.
Because the letters are really, really important. And again, as I always will continue to do, if you've heard me talk about this book at all, I will give credit to my incredible editor, Rebecca Taylor, because she's kind of the one who will kick it back at me. You know, as much as I want to be this brilliant creator that sits at his desk and comes out with great stuff on the first try, this is not true. I need back and forth with somebody, with another reader, mm-hmm. like my first reader, and that's what she is. Tay is my first reader. She gets to read the draft first, and she'll be like, I don't think it's there yet. Nice. and I'm like, well, why? And she'll be like, well, I don't know. It's just not done. And a great editor is good at doing exactly that, letting me tell my story, but making sure that it's as good as I can possibly tell it. Mm. Anybody else would really be like, well, let me just, you know, do a draft for you, and I'll tell you what I was thinking. That's not helpful to me. I need to tell the story myself.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of kind of you said that you were doing the letters a lot of times in the final like art drafts and things. So your visual style, there's like it communicates like motion and action and even like sound effects. And I think it was a while back you did an interview with somebody and mentioned how you didn't use or didn't really like using text sound effects. And I guess I'd really never noticed that they were lacking in your art. They just weren't there. And so can you give us a little bit of a clue into how you communicate that the sound through just the art without this text?
Yeah, it's funny. I made that decision really, really early in the series when I was really deciding to do my own thing, and I wasn't looking to other books for guidelines or anything. I just remember thinking, you know what? I hate sound effects in comics. I just don't like it. I don't feel like it ever really adds. For me, from my experience, I'm not saying that across the board I'd try to convince everybody to remove sound effects. Just from my own experience, I've always felt like they got in the way of the storytelling, and that they were something that artists and writers were maybe falling back on because we have this great loss in comic books of sound. Sound is one of the most powerful things. You can watch a horror movie with the sound off and it won't affect you at all. Mm-hmm. And so when you approach a story in comics and you don't have sound, that's a big setback to start out with in this medium. And so I understand the desire to put that in. But Krakoom just doesn't do it for me. You know, it just doesn't really give me the feeling of what just happened, and I don't want to have to reinvent a sound effect or come up with something original, or you know, it just doesn't make sense. And it's interesting for me to hear from readers like you and say, oh, I didn't even notice that there wasn't sound. That's great. That's you know, it would be bad if you read and you're like, oh, this is really missing something. I don't want anything to be missing. So
yeah, it definitely, to me, it also feels like I have an idea of what that would sound like in my head. And so, but whenever somebody puts it on the page, it's like, I'm forced into whatever they thought it would sound like, whether they thought it was a bam or like you said, like a Krakoom or something like that. You know, you're kind of pigeonholed into like whatever they said there. But if you kind of leave it up to the art to communicate this, it really leaves it into your imagination, which is a wider breadth of you know, experience, I guess. So your personal experiences kind of, you know, communicate that.
Yeah. There have been really, really great uses of text, sound effects, text. And the first one that comes to mind actually, is just as we're talking here, is Sam Keith's, The Max. Do you guys remember that series at all?
Not off the top of my head.
Oh man, that was such a great series. But he did great use of sound effects in the background. There was always this rhythmic, like drumbeat thing, or as I read it anyway, going on in the planes of the imagination of this girl, and that really brought you into this other world in her imagination for a long time. And man, that was great. He used it really, really well. I don't think I know how to do that, you know. So I kind of just went with my gut and hoped that people wouldn't feel like they missed it.
That's awesome. Before we move on from the art style, something I also wanted to ask you about was, you know, your art is very cinematic, like in the way that you even, you know, you use almost 16 and 9 frames, and you know, kind of just, it looks, it's very it feels like I'm watching a movie, you know, and you know, was that purposeful? Is that something you like set out, I want this to feel like that?
Thank you. Those are nice things to say. I I don't think that, again, I don't think I set out being like, I really want this to feel cinematic. But I think that because I have a background in film school. I went to film school. I actually took animation in film school.
Nice.
But I learned how to storyboard before anything else, really. Mm. So, you know, I read a lot of Spider-Man comics when I was young, and I was into comics for quite a while in kind of my younger years, and then kind of quit comics for a while. And so when I took my storyboarding training to comics when I got into some of my earlier books as well as Rust, I found that the compositions that were most appealing to me were these kind of cinematic compositions. I didn't know what to do with the composition that was wide because, or like really tall across the page, even though I see other artists do it all the time and it's super cool. Mm-hmm. And you almost wish that you could watch movies like that. But I didn't know how to compose shots like that. So I would try to, and if you go back, I'm poking holes in my own artwork now, but if you go look at volume one, there's more variety in panel structure than there is in volume two. And then there's even a little bit less in volume three. And as the series goes on, I'm using more and I'm just giving in more and more, just saying, oh, okay, I'm just going to do four long panels all the way down to the bottom because that's just what's more comfortable for me. So, cinematic is a good thing. I think that's effective. I'm glad it works for people.
Yeah, definitely. And it's in the pacing as well. Especially like early on in each book, whenever you're kind of setting the stage of things, there'll be like these static shots and you kind of just zoom out from the farm or you'll zoom back into the farm and it'll just be kind of these stage setting where you can imagine just a film crew, that sort of thing, kind of zooming in and out on this.
It's very emotional.
Crane. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. It's like, you guys don't know how rewarding it is to hear from readers. I mean, I get to talk to people at conventions and stuff, but like to hear from people like you that have read it and what their experience is as they read it, that's really, really valuable to me because sometimes I'm trying something and I'm like, oh, it worked. You know, depending on, you know, what your interpretation was. And other times I do things from my gut, not thinking about it. And you know, Gezik, you'll tell me about it. And I'll be like, oh, wow, what was it that I did that worked? Like, I got to think, you know, kind of deconstruct my process a bit. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. So was there anything, I guess, that you've tried in volume three here that's coming out on the 7th that you were, it was one of those things where, hey, I'll try this and see what the reaction is to this. Was there anything that you tried new in this book that you were kind of testing?
No, I'm trying not to test too much anymore.
Right on.
Volume three had there were some scenes in it that were really important to me, either for the emotional context of the story or for the action. Mm. Have you guys read an advanced copy of Volume 3 yet?
Yes, we have.
Okay. So, but we shouldn't have any spoilers. But there's a couple of scenes in there, particularly one where the robot's gathering eggs for the Taylor family.
Yeah.
And trying to build you know, tension without overdoing it and having people be like, okay, I know what's coming. Come on, like hurry up and get to the shot. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know what's coming. Trying not to overdo tension, anticipation like that. Those were kind of challenges. So I'm interested to hear, you know, again, from people, how they responded to that and if it worked.
I have to say it definitely did work, by the way. Just
good. That's good. I guess maybe I need to eat my words a bit. I guess I'm always experimenting a little bit. It's not old hat all the time because I'm not telling the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
that between that and the scene between Roman and Jesse on the front porch, where there's so much hanging on what's not said, mm-hmm. and those moments of silence between them, those are challenging to draw, but they're a really fun challenge. Mm-hmm. And so, those are some scenes, and there's other ones too that were really fun. But it's, Yeah, I guess I am always experimenting a little bit.
That's awesome. That's,
I didn't think about it that way.
That moment on the porch that you just mentioned, it was one of my favorites in the third book, you know, and on several different levels. On, like you said, just the things that weren't said, the things that were said, you know, that Jesse says before she walks back in the house and kind of just that it just lets it hang there. And then, you know, even before that, just the art, you know, you have the sun setting, like it's just beautiful. And what astounds me is that it's beautiful and it's really only like three tones.
Yeah, it's in like sepia, you know, and it's like, but it communicates that sunset very well. It's just like, holy man, that's a beautiful sunset, you know?
That's good. Cause it's, sometimes it's hard to convince or it's hard to show that stuff early, like, you know, when people are Kea or my editor gets to see like the early line art, I'm like, okay, this is going to be a sunset scene. Like, it's going to be really nice. It's really hard to communicate what's going on. So I'm always nervous when I show people just the line art at first. But to be really honest, it's way easier painting a sunset in black and white or sepia tone in this case than it is full color. Because full color, access to all the colors, it's kind of like, well, am I going to use peach or am I going to use magenta or, you know, what kind of sunset is this? If I just have black and white, that's all I have. So it's, you know, it's way easier to make decisions.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Something that I also wanted to bring up, you have a pretty like diverse set of characters, throughout the book, throughout, I guess, this story, people like Ava, who's blind, and then Oswald, who has like a prosthetic hand. What challenges have you like encountered while you were writing or illustrating, these characters that have such diversity and all of that?
I think just, and I hate to, you know, show my weakness, but I mean, the truth is it's hard for me to take all of the characters and make sure that they're all having a meaningful arc together. Mm-hmm. It's easier to think about one person or even two people because two people interacting is pretty common. But you know, we're learning a lot about Jet Jones and his past and his interaction with this kind of shadowy engineer figure that pops up. Mm-hmm. And of course, Roman Taylor, that's, you know, there's more focus there. But then there's these other characters that are complex. And yet, at the same time, they're also really simple, like Ava and Oz. Oz has got some more complex issues. But Ava is kind of like... she's really important to me as a character, and she's going to be a lot more important in book four. Just keeping everybody moving, I think, is the big challenge. Nothing about their personalities or their, I guess you'd say, like disabilities are complex. That makes them more interesting for me.
Yeah.
The fact that Ava's blind and that Oz is handicapped, those are easy. It's all the rest of it. It's making them regular people outside of that stuff.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. There's a I guess the main moment that I always call back to is just the beautiful way that you kind of introduced, Ava and didn't like, it doesn't ever bring attention to any of these things. And it's just kind of, you know, it's just there. And especially like on the very first book, there's a moment, with her and Roman on like the motorcycle. That's like one of the moments that I always call back to and just say, hey, that's a really great emotional moment in that, you know, in that family. So.
Yeah, that was really, really fun, that scene in the first book. The funnest thing about it was not focusing on Ava's blindness, really, or not ever coming out and saying, hey, Ava, you blind girl, you know, come here and give Roman a hug. Like, seeing if the way that the story is told in the natural setting that it was, this natural situation of dinner time in the evening, if we would be able to tell that Ava's blind, along with, of course, you know, the artwork has some tips as well. But that was really fun to just like see if I could show a blind girl without anybody saying Ava is blind, you know.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a great feat, I know. It probably is pull off fairly easily, but that kind of stuff is interesting to me, like trying to tell the story through the action and conversation more than you know, actually demonstrative or like real, like just straight up narration or something. You
yeah.
know?
Right. I mean, that especially, like, again, it also, that moment impressed me as well, just because, you know, like, that's how, you know, in your own family, you don't, you know, you don't just bring attention to those kind of things, you know, like,
you just hang out, you know?
Yeah. If you have someone in your family who's blind, you're not going to, you know, bring attention to it. You're just going to be yourself, and they're just going to, you know, act naturally. And the way it came up felt very natural, and it impressed me.
Yeah.
Cool. I kind of always forget to even bring this up, but my dad was in a plane crash before I was born, and he lost his right hand. Mm. So he had a hook on his right hand. So Oz is very much inspired by my dad.
Mm. Wow.
So I grew up in a family with somebody with a handicap like that. And so I do have some experience in that way, but in the same way, the story's not about Oz or Oz's handicap,
right?
Or it's not even about how he lost his hand. It's about lots of other things. Yeah. So,
definitely. So speaking about kind of the storyline, and kind of going into that, where do you see, I mean, I guess we can't really get into that. I was going to ask you to spoil some of the next book because I want it, but I guess I shouldn't probably do that. So,
well, like, do you, like, you know, things are moving a lot faster now in the third book. You know, there's a lot more dialogue. You know, we're getting a lot of our questions answered. A lot of the mysteries being pulled back around Jet Jones and the robots and just the war and those types of things. Does that continue? Does that, you know, speed up as we go on? And then, you know, how are there only four books? Are there more than four books, or do you have that planned out?
Yeah. So right now there is only four books. I know that this story arc will end in this fourth book. Mm-hmm. Okay. Whether we explore the world of Rust beyond that is, you know, I always want to kind of leave that door open. Mm-hmm. But I don't have any plans for it right now. Yeah, we get to see a lot more. I mean, I hope that the veil is really pulled back in the fourth book as to what is really going on and who Jet is. But the one thing that I've always said, and I hope I'm not like over warning people, that I've never intended to completely unveil everything. Mm-hmm. I think that stories are way more interesting when they're not completely unpacked at the very end. If there's still questions at the end of the story, those are the things that make you continue to think about it and ponder the story in your mind. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be things that leave you kind of unsatisfied. I mean, there are things that are that don't end satisfactory because we want everything to be good in the end and everybody to be happy, but that's not real life. Mm-hmm. So there are ways that stories can end that feel like complete and real, but also leaving you feeling with questions still. And I think that's the kind of story that I'm telling. So hopefully that doesn't turn fans and readers off. I'm not going to leave people on a big cliffhanger. I know that I have in each book. I've always said that I believe that the fourth book will be satisfying.
Cool.
But I have also said that I'm not going to answer all the questions in the series. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't know how that makes people feel.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I can see, you know, part of our audience liking that and part of them, you know, not. I like that kind of thing, you know, whenever, you know, I think about, you know, TV shows like Lost or something like that. And whenever they try to tie everything up and, you know, those types of things, you know, I like it whenever you leave some things on it. You don't have to answer, you know, like if it's not relevant to this story, you don't have to understand the whole world, because that's not really real life. I don't understand everything about this world, you know, like
this is a story about a family. It's not a story about this like post-apocalyptic sci-fi world. It's taking place in this, obviously. I heard a great new term recently, maybe I'm just new to it, but somebody called it what was it, genre drama.
Wow.
It's like I guess basically how you would describe, you know, science fiction with a real dramatic story.
Yeah.
So I heard that and I was like, oh yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. This is a story about a family and story about the Taylors and what their life will look like, after Jet has come, like how it affects them going forward through the rest of their life. That's something that I want to show people. And what happens to Jet and where he goes, what becomes of him and his past. And I don't intend to leave people hanging in a big way. But yeah, it's a story about the family. So we gotta wrap up their story and see them off at the end of that fourth volume.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
So a while back, I don't even remember how long ago, but a while back there was a lot of buzz going around kind of about a Rust movie, potentially being in the works. What is the status of that kind of project, currently?
The status is, for the most part, typical Hollywood stuff, I can't really talk about too much. Because I was actually hired by the studio, so that was fun.
Nice.
Yeah, so I will say, all these things are public, that Fox has been really, really excited about Rust as a property and as a story.
Cool.
And they continue to be excited, and it's still, at this point in time, it's still moving forward.
Cool.
Things are really... You know, things, especially in Hollywood, they can go away like overnight. Mm-hmm. Suddenly robots are just not cool anymore for whatever reason. And then all those movies get canceled. Mm-hmm. And I'm prepared for that. But the last few years have been a bit of a roller coaster on that front, but also, you know, really cool to see a story that you spend so many years of your life telling and see other people adopt it and kind of get excited about it and make it their own and have creative vision for it and stuff. And it's all been really, really fun, which is the opposite of what I heard about Hollywood.
Cool. Well, that's awesome. That's encouraging.
That's awesome.
We would both, I know, love to see a Rust movie. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that makes three of us.
So we got Free Comic Book Day coming up. Yep. Do you go out to your comic shop and pick anything up? You know, is there anything that our listeners, you know, besides obviously your addition to Free Comic Book Day that, you know, you think that they should pick up?
Oh man. As far as free comic books, on Saturday, I don't know what else is coming out. So
yeah.
What usually happens is I go to my local shop and support the Arkea Free Comic Book, and do, you know, signing and sketches. Nice. And stuff. And then of course, while I'm there, before the doors open. So I get to grab some stuff and,
that's awesome.
Do you know where you'll be? So if anyone is listening up in the Seattle area, they can come see you?
Of course, yeah. I'll be at Subspace Comics in Linwood, which is formerly known as the Comic Stop. And they just changed hands to Subspace Comics this year. So, and that's where I've been the past couple of years. So I don't think anyone will be too surprised.
Cool. Awesome.
To find me there. And yeah, it's a great, great shop. And it's always, you know, always got to line up outside, you know, for an hour before they open the doors, and it's really fun. Lots of kids, and as Free Comic Book Day always is, so it's really, really fun.
That's awesome. So speaking of like signings, do you have any conventions you're heading to or anything during the summer season?
I've scaled back conventions a little bit this year because my wife and I just had our first baby. So
oh, wow. Congratulations!
Thank you. That kind of rules your schedule in a big way for a long
for
time.
Sure.
So, but I do know for sure I will be, well, I'm quite sure I will be in Denver. There's a convention in Denver that is kind of new.
Okay.
Cool.
I don't even know the name of it actually off the top of my head, but, I'm going to go there and be a guest of Boom. So I'll be at the Boom, booth, signing copies of Rust, obviously. I will be there every day except Sunday so far. So, that's the only thing actually that's like rock solid in my schedule.
Right on.
For the first time in years, I may actually miss San Diego this year, which would kind of be a bummer, but, especially with the third volume out. So yeah. I'm not sure yet, but I've just let a lot of things slide. I used to be on top of like, oh, I got to get my badge, I got to get all this stuff. And this year I was kind of like, what? Well, I missed the hotels? Oh, no, I don't have a hotel. Okay, well, we'll see what happens.
Sleep in a van down by the river or something.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So at these conventions, there's like an increased number of people like cosplaying Jet Jones, which is pretty awesome. To see kids with jetpacks running around, like that's amazing.
I thought about it years ago. I mean, like when the book came out, I'm like, am I gonna see, like, one day am I actually gonna see somebody come up to me dressed as Jet Jones? Like, I couldn't even fathom that happening, and now it is. I actually haven't, a couple of the shows I haven't been at, but I get photos from Boom or photos from fans, and yeah, that's it's kind of mind-blowing. It's really hard to describe what that's like.
That's awesome.
This character I've been drawing for years now, I've just been working on and drawing so often, and see complete strangers that don't know me, I don't know them, and they just clearly dropped several hundred dollars on an amazing costume. That's pretty cool.
What's the best one that you've seen?
There was one, they're all really amazing. I have to say, there was one that I just saw recently in Chicago, or I had a fan send it to me from Chicago, and it was really, really cool. But the best one I saw, I just saw photos and video of a cosplayer at Stanley's Kamikaze in LA. Mm-hmm. Is that where that is? And he had smoke coming out of his jetpack and like LED lights and stuff.
That is awesome.
The blades on the top of the intake spun.
Wow.
It was high end. Like it was a full on costume. It was really amazing.
That's amazing. I'm just like thinking, did he like put dry ice in there? How did he get it to smoke?
I don't know. I have no idea. He said his dad helped him with it. He was like a 13 or 14 year old kid. He was like the perfect age for Jet Jones.
Oh, yeah.
He had like the square goggles and everything, which are hard to find.
Wow.
And, I don't know. I don't know how he did it. It had to have been some kind of dry ice system.
That's amazing.
That's awesome. That's all the questions that we have. You know, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I don't think so. You guys, like I said, I love talking to guys like you and getting to know people that like the book. And like I said, hearing how you read it and what you thought of it is that's the biggest reward out of everything.
Cool. Well, awesome. Thank you so much. We really appreciate being on. The book is out May 7th. That's next Wednesday. And then there's a free comic book day offering from Arcadia. Royden has a piece in there. You can pick that up at your local comic shop. We really appreciate you, man. Like, you're not only just one of my favorite comic writers, you're one of my favorite just story writers. You know, like, I really, really, you know, like, enjoy the way that you write your stories. And,
cool. Thanks, guys. I'm sorry that I can't, you know, put in more hours and put the book out on a more regular basis and get other stories out there. It's just hard to do.
Well, we can imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
I couldn't imagine like what it takes to do that.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you letting me know how much you like it, and it's people like you that this book is for. I'm always trying to remind myself not to chase after, you know, lots of fans and all sort of thing, because it's kind of endless. I always try to remember that, hearing, you know, from just a couple of guys like you saying that you like the story, well, it's written for you, you know. That's all that it matters. I don't have to have a bunch of fans and that sort of thing, because that can really eat you up, and you can obsess about it as you're writing the story. So thank you for enjoying it and for letting me know.
Well, once again, just thank you for being on the podcast. And if people want to follow you on Twitter, what is your Twitter handle?
I am at Royden Lepp.
And you can find us always online at stayontargetpodcast.com. And they can check out Rust. And again, that's May 7th for the release of Rust. Head to your local comic shop and pick that guy up. Or you can pre-order it on Amazon, that sort of thing as well. All right, I think that's all for now. We'll see you next time on Stay on Target.